Well, good morning to you. It's 7:30. It's Wednesday, May 29th. I'm Alex Jensen. You're listening to This Morning. And coming up, we'll dive deeper into the 2019 EU Parliament election results with Brexit looming and nationalist populism said to be on the rise. Was that borne out at this year's election, a political event that's held every 5 years, seen by many as decisive for the EU's future? This half hour is brought to you by Dongsa Foods, Lotte Chilsun Beverage, Coca-Cola, Hyundai Motor Company, Huanan Pharmaceutical Company, G-Market Global and Market Designers. Now, the European Parliament elections have revealed some unexpected outcomes as the full picture from the world's biggest multi-country vote has become clearer this week. Over 4 days last week, voters across 28 countries delivered the highest turnout in a European election for 20 years, and the results suggest a complicated future for the EU as voters look for new ways forward. Let's see what we can take away from all that. We have on the line Professor Hussein Kassim from the Department of Politics at the University of East Anglia in Norwich, England. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be a guest on your show.
And tell us why we saw such a important turnout here, a 20-year record, more than 50% of voters heading to the polls. Does that suggest issues like Brexit and perhaps any others on the continent have forced people out to vote?
Brexit certainly has been an important motivation, but I think across Europe, in all of the members of the EU has become a salient issue for many members of the population in a way that it wasn't historically. There's been the rise of Eurosceptic parties, and Europe has become a sort of contested issue in a way that it wasn't historically. So I think that's why you've seen the turnout. The rise of Eurosceptic parties meant that the parties who are pro-European have been very, very enthusiastic and very determined to mobilise their own support. And I think all of that adds up to the increased turnout that you saw over the last few days.
Is it fair to say that there's a general trend, though, that centrist groups lost ground? Certainly, I know in Britain, the Conservatives and the Labour Party didn't do very well, but was that a trend elsewhere?
It's not a general trend. It's very difficult to generalise on the basis of these elections because, to an extent, they are very contextual. So the domestic factors playing out in each country are also important. What is certainly true is that the two major parties at the centre, the centre-left party and the centre-right party, so the centre-left Socialist and Democrat Party and the party on the right, the European People's Party, they ceased to be the two. Historically, they've had a majority in the European Parliament. They've lost that majority collectively now. But on the other hand, one of the real winners of the election has been the Liberal Party at the centre. So they have added quite dramatically, in fact, to their vote tally. So there's been a redistribution at the centre rather than a move away to the extreme left or the extreme right.
But it seemed like it was, I don't know if the word polarised is exactly right, but it did seem like the Liberal Democrats attracted so much support because they were simply offering an alternative to Brexit. Media played that out rather well, saying, look, people, if you don't want Brexit to happen, vote for Liberal Democrats. And that's obviously what some people did, but the Brexit Party won quite significantly. How do you interpret that?
Yeah, I mean, in the UK, has its own sort of very particular story here. So, the issue with the Conservative Party was that, this was a pro-Brexit party over the last couple of years, and because Brexit wasn't delivered when the Prime Minister said it would be delivered on the 29th of March, a lot of people abandoned the Conservative Party and voted for the Brexit Party, which is unequivocally pro-Brexit. That's certainly true. With the Labour Party, the story was a bit more complex. The Labour Party has rather sort of prevaricated on this. It's tried to play a sort of, it's tried to secure support from both the Remain, from Remain voters and Leave voters, and without, for example, declaring unequivocally that it would like to have a second referendum. And as a result, people who support Remain decided they wanted to vote for a party that would very strongly signal that they wanted to stay in the EU. There are two parties of that sort in the UK. There's the Lib Dems, which have historically been the pro-European party, but also the Green Party. So it's more a sort of redistribution. Well, in this particular case, there is a polarisation, and it's manifested itself in a move away from the two main parties. But you know, whether that can be generalised across the EU as a whole, that's a bit more difficult to demonstrate.
Can we say, though, just sticking with the Brexit issue for a moment, that if there was a referendum now, a second referendum on the question of Brexit, that this election has told us anything?
Not really. I mean, what it's told us again, I mean, but I think, you know, those of us living in the UK have known this for the last 3 years, is a divided society, and that your Remain and Leavers are pretty much evenly divided. It also tells us that those identities have become more important than anything else in shaping people's political behaviour. I mean, historically, you know, in the UK, it was class that determined what you would vote. But now, certainly at this current time, it's whether you are a Remain or a Leaver. So it's, you know, it's really unclear. It gives us no indication as to what a vote in a possible second referendum might be.
Now let's broaden out to look at the European Parliament as a whole over the coming years. Does it actually make a big difference for the EU, whoever emerges, whether it's the European People's Party with power or the Progressive Alliance of Socialists and Democrats or the Alliance of Liberals and Democrats for Europe, all these titles which, frankly, don't seem to mean nearly as much to individuals living in the EU as their own domestic parties?
Well, I think, again, that varies from country to country. I mean, I think if you're a centre-right voter in Germany and vote for the Christian Democrats, then you know the EPP is your party because the EPP is much more visible in Germany than it is in the UK. It certainly will change the dynamics of the Parliament a bit because seeing as the centre left and the EPP have now lost power and they haven't got their majority, they can't absolutely determine, for example, who will be the favoured candidate for the Commission President, for example. So that, to that extent, it really does matter. It matters to a lesser extent because the culture in the European Parliament is one of coalition building around the centre. There's a very strong sort of consensus-oriented dynamic culture in the European Parliament. And now that will have to include somehow Aldi, the Liberal Party, who actually sort of sits between the EPP and the party of the centre left.
In terms of decision making, though, one of the challenges with the European Union, of course, is keeping everybody happy at a time when the EU is under great threat, not least because of Brexit. Does it change things massively there?
I would say that the threat is somewhat exaggerated. I mean, there is strong US scepticism, but one of the dogs that failed to bark in this election were the populist party. I mean, it's true that were the populist parties. I mean, it's true that the Rassemblement for the Republic in France, the Le Pen's party, Marine Le Pen's party, came first, but they won that election by one seat. It's true that Salvini and the Lega Nord in Italy also won. They didn't win as convincingly as many people had thought or given or certain perspectives feared. So it wasn't the sort of the populist rush to power that many had imagined. Mm. So it's true that there's a wider distribution of seats and votes, and it's true that you cannot effectively, to use a sort of pejorative term, sort of stitch up the proceedings of the parliament just by working through two parties anymore. There will have to be a sort of wider opening. But I still think that, it's still the case that the pro-European parties are the strongest and have between them, if you include Aldi in that, have a majority. So it's just that, the two parties by themselves, the party of the centre-right and centre-left, can no longer act as kingmakers in determining who is going to be the Commission President, for example.
But given the importance of alliances, what do you think of the prospects of Salvini, who you mentioned before, the man leading a right-wing camp, taking victory, even if it wasn't as significant a victory as it might have been. And he himself, as a Eurosceptic, has said he'll try to form an anti-EU bloc with the likes of Marine Le Pen in France and Hungary's Viktor Orban, who did enjoy quite a significant victory, didn't he, in Hungary?
Yes, that's also true. Yes, but you know, this is nothing new in the European Parliament. I mean, there was also a strong grouping on let's call it the far right in the 2014 election. It's just not as large as many people had anticipated that the populist sort of vote would be.
It's an odd situation, though, isn't it, when you get anti-EU sceptics sitting there in the European Parliament. I mean, we've seen plenty of YouTube clips of the likes of Nigel Farage attracting boos and jeers in that sort of setting.
Oh, absolutely. But actually, one might argue that it's better to have the full range of opinion expressed internally within a parliament than it is to have people becoming anti-system, being without. I'm sure that there are many people who are not waking up or didn't wake up on Monday morning, delighted at the prospect of the Brexit Party being the largest single national grouping in the Parliament, for example. There will be sort of difficulties caused. But looking at the maps at the sort of charts of all of this, we are talking about a fifth of the Parliament. The other big story, of course, is the increase in vote for the Greens, which really is a very significant development. I mean, one that was I don't think predicted.
Yeah, well, certainly they've gone from being a nice vote to one that's being taken very seriously these days, which I guess on environmental issues is very encouraging. Just quickly on Brexit, as we've been talking about it, and you are based there in the UK, what happens next with Prime Minister Theresa May stepping down a few days into June? We are going to see a change, but these European elections leave us wondering what on earth's going to happen the next time people get a chance to vote for the leader of the UK.
Yes, I mean that's certainly true, and so it's a sort of two-level game in many ways. I mean, the first level is that we have to have there's going to be a Conservative Party election for the leader, and the leader is likely to take a sort of strong hardline Brexit position. So we've already heard Boris Johnson, for example, who in many people's eyes is a favourite, saying that whatever happens, the UK will leave on the 31st of October this year. So deal or no deal. That's a line that is likely to be popular amongst the 120,000 members of the Conservative Party who are the sort of electorate in this particular campaign. But whether that changes the mathematics of Parliament, whether that changes the strength of the UK negotiating position vis-a-vis the EU27, that remains to be seen. That will be a much more difficult nut to crack. And we've seen a succession of prime ministers and arriving at the dinner that was held in Brussels tonight for bringing together the European Council, where prime minister after prime minister interviewed would say, look, actually nothing changes so far as the negotiations are concerned. We're not going back to open the withdrawal agreement. And essentially their line is, it can't just be the case that if you're changing prime minister that we can renegotiate, because when would that ever bring negotiations to a conclusion.
Thank you very much, Professor Hussein Kassim from the University of East Anglia's Department of Politics. Great to have you with us on the line.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you.